Fasten your seatbelts and turn up your radio. We're going on a road trip. In what has become a controversial August vote, the Natural Resources Board set a quota of 300 wolves to be hunted in the fall season. That action overruled a recommendation of 130 wolves by the Department of Natural Resources and was met 2 weeks later with a lawsuit by a wildlife advocacy group seeking to stop the hunt. Back in February, a different lawsuit prompted a season that resulted in 218 wolves killed over a three-day span, a number critics say is too high. While some farmers and hunters support efforts to further reduce the state's wolf population, the hunt incensed many state residents and tribal members, and tensions over wolf management are continuing. Welcome to Route 51. I'm Shireen Siewert. Wisconsin doesn't just allow a wolf hunting season. It's required by state law when the animals are not federally listed as endangered. It's the only state with such a legal requirement. But hunting the gray wolf, once an endangered species, remains a contentious issue. Advocates argue that hunting is the only way to control the animals, which they see as a threat to livestock and pets. Critics say the wolf population is still too small to sustain hunting, and members of some tribal nations say they feel they're being ignored in their concerns about wolf hunting in the state. Joining us today is wildlife biologist Adrian Wydevin, formerly with the Department of Natural Resources and current chair of the Timber Wolf Alliance. The alliance is part of the Sigurd Olsen Environmental Institute at Northland College in Ashland. Adrian, thank you so much for being here today.
Welcome for having me.
Also joining us is Patrick Quaintance. He is a president of the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation. He's a retired Wisconsin Conservation Warden and has also been involved with the Wisconsin Conservation Congress and various hunting groups. Pat, welcome to Route 51. Our next guest is Paul DeMain. And Paul is a retired managing editor and CEO of Indian Country Communications, news from Indian Country, and producer for Indian Country TV based in the Lacouture Ojibwe Reservation in northern Wisconsin. He's a member of the Oneida Nation of Wisconsin and of Ojibwe descent, with relations on many Ojibwe reservations here in Wisconsin and Minnesota. He's also a former Indian Affairs Policy Advisor under Governor Anthony Earle from 1982 to 1986. Paul, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Listeners with questions for our guests are welcome to join the conversation by calling us at 800-780-9742. You can also email us at route51@wpr.org. Adrian, what is the Timber Wolf Alliance? What role does it play in this issue?
Well, Timber Wolf Alliance does not take positions on things such as whether it should or should not be hunting seasons, but is an educational organization, promotes sound science for wolf management. We were created in 1987 at the time that Wisconsin DNR was developing its first recovery plan. And one of the things that we do every year is celebrate Wolf Awareness Week, which will be starting on Sunday. And each year we produce posters of wolves to depict wolves in natural habitat, natural scenery, and to educate people about wolves, their role in the environment, the role in ecology, to promote sound science and wolf management.
And Pat, tell us about the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation. What is its mission?
The mission is pretty much the same as what Adrian said. We're a nonprofit organization. We represent 206 sportsman groups in the state of Wisconsin. Right now, we're an educational type group. Also, where different things come to us, we either support it or non-support it. And we're an environmental group also. Executive director was Secretary George Meyer. We got Mark LaBarber that took his place. He's doing very well, and so on. So there's a lot of issues. We voted along the line of 300 wolves with the Conservation Congress, plus the Wisconsin Bear Hunters Association, and we also supported the Natural Resource Board in that issue also of having 300 wolves. So,
and Paul, as a member of the Oneida Nation, how involved are you with the wolf hunt issue?
I'm not involved in the wolf hunt issue at all, other than from the perspective of an Indigenous person. We have 11 tribes in the state of Wisconsin. Each one of those tribes has a clan totem family relationship with the wolves. All 11 tribes do, which shows a little bit about the relationship that Indigenous people here in the Great Lakes have with those animals. And what I've done is pretty much covered resource news through News from Indian Country for about 40 years. And while I'm retiring from that, I still chair the Honor the Earth organization, environmental organization, which concerns itself with natural resources, treaty rights, the preservation of pristine waters and other resources in the Great Lakes region and in North America, basically looking at the earth nowadays.
Thank you for explaining that. As I mentioned, Wisconsin is the only state that mandates a wolf season. It's one of five that allows wolves to be hunted at all. Adrian, can you explain what does the law say about hunting wolves in Wisconsin? When is it permitted?
Well, currently, the Wisconsin law on wolf hunting and trapping requires that the state holds a wolf hunting and trapping season every year when they aren't listed as a federal or state threatened or endangered species. Initially, the hunting season would have started in mid-October. That was revised in 2015 to start on the first Saturday in November and can potentially extend to the end of February unless the wolf quotas are met in zones. And when hunting seasons were previously used in Wisconsin, all the zones typically ended by early mid-December. So the season's never quite extended into January, February. That differed this last year, winter, when we did have a wolf hunting season in February.
Has that law been on the books for a long time?
That was created in 2012, right after wolves were delisted in 2012. So that law has been on the books now for about 9 years.
Okay. Pat, what is the primary reason that wolves are hunted?
It's just a management tool to be able to keep the wolves in check. It's well known that the problems that we've had in depredation and so on, it's a tool to be able to manage the wolves.
Okay. And Adrian, generally speaking, where does the opposition come from? Why do some people, even people who hunt other animals like deer, oppose hunting wolves?
Well, there are some people who oppose any kind of hunting unless the animal is being used for food. In the case of wolves, obviously, they're not going to be used for food, but they are a fur-bearing mammal that are hunted and trapped in many in other states and in most Canadian provinces where they do occur. I think the opposition ranges from people who still see wolves as an endangered species and don't feel they're ready to be a hunted species. And there are people who just oppose hunting in general. So I'm sure it covers a whole range of various issues. Paul will talk more about this, but certainly amongst many Native Americans, they play a special cultural role. So there's opposition to hunting because of that as well.
Paul, let's talk about that a little bit. What role does the wolf have in Native American culture, especially here in Wisconsin? And so what does that play a role in the perspective on hunting?
Well, it has a cultural perspective that goes way back hundreds of thousands of years. Some of the original stories talk about how wolf and Indigenous people, Native Americans, the Ojibwe, other tribes would follow the same path side by side and suffer the same fate. And so when we watch the demise and extinction and the sporting of the wolf, those people who are clan and family members to that wolf, and our communities have studied the wolves extensively in terms of how they act, how they react, how they self-populate themselves and regulate themselves and those kinds of things. A lot of historic traditional ecological knowledge that goes into it. But, you know, in terms of the discussion today, I'm just going to say that I think the latest discussion in the last few years is a totally wrong approach. I think in the long run, we need a long-term solution, and that long-term solution looks the same as what established our national parks, our state parks, and everything else, where we create corridors, biocorridors that are not only forested and replicate what used to be, but allows corridors for these types of animals, moose and wolf and elk and other, to exist. And it's a long-term plan in which we're telling people that it's time to remove people from some of these corridors. We're the ones that have imposed ourselves within their territories, causing their demise. So rather than talking about all the intricacies of trying to accommodate a group of hunters that represent probably less than a half of 1% and are influenced by outsized money institutions, organizations from out of the state, and a law, the only state in the country that has a law that forces you to kill wolves as a tool. In other words, you know, I know tribal members who want to take fur-bearing animals, including wolves, and we need to accommodate that. But I think we need to look at the long-term institutional racism and other things that guides these decisions from a European sporting event attitude rather than a deep attitude of respect toward all living things.
There's obviously a range of perspectives here as we discuss this issue. And one of the big disagreements in this issue is the wolf quota itself. Adrian, DNR scientists advocated for a lower number. And before we get into the varying positions on that, I want to ask you, how do scientists determine the appropriate number of wolves that can be hunted? How do they figure that out?
Well, sustainable numbers would be a level that a population can sustain without the population taking drastic declines. And that's been kind of learned by looking at wolf populations across all of North America and what different levels of harvest and different levels of controls have done to the population. So there's signs that suggest that about 25-30% of a population can be removed by humans, and that's all removal by humans, including illegal kill, vehicle collisions, as well as legal harvest, to sustain a population at a certain level. But at the same time, you know, what is a sustainable harvest versus when and how the harvest should occur are a sort of almost questions that are beyond really science, and those are more of cultural and social issues, as well as political issues as to what levels of a population should be managed. One of the things that often is used for setting population goals are what is a biological carrying capacity. And typically in wildlife management, we manage populations within 70-80% of their biological carrying capacity. If you reduce it way below that, the population has a risk of going through very rapid declines and instability.
Well, the DNR scientists recommended a quota of 130 wolves in the upcoming fall hunt. The Natural Resources Board set a quota of 300. Half of that is set aside for tribal nations in the state. Pat, what was your reaction to the number that was set?
Well, one of the things that we looked at when we talked about this with the Wildlife Federation was, and also we looked at the Conservation Congress 300 wolves, plus we looked at the rest of the Wisconsin bear hunters. And one of the things is there's been 350 level of wolves that are with the wolf management plan that's been outdated for many years here, and we've talked about this, but it right now the wolf management plan says 350 wolves. We have not even attempted to reach that quota level or that level of 350 wolves. We agree that someday, hopefully, we'll get back on the table and get this wolf management plan ironed out and be able to determine what is sustainable. And Adrian can even contest to this, is that once the wolf population reached 350 or above that, we started having a lot of depredation. And I think our main concern is that it would have been nice to have a farmer on here also to talk about the problems they're having with depredation. And I'm living right in amongst people that are having problems with depredation. Five calves were killed this spring to the south of me, five calves to the north of me within a half mile of my house here. So another five horses were killed to the west of me within a mile of my house here. And these people are very irate with it. And Adrian can contest to this also, that once we reach this level of a problem where we're having depredation, people are getting frustrated and discouraged with this. They've lost calves that they cannot find or can, and they don't get reimbursed for it, and so on. Sure. So the people really get frustrated with it, and pretty soon we got people shooting wolves that shouldn't be shooting wolves.
Sure. We'll continue this discussion in just a moment, but we need to take a break. You're listening to Pat Quaintance, Paul DeMaine, and Adrian Wydevin, our guests today on Route 51, as we continue this discussion on the issues and controversy surrounding the wolf hunt in Wisconsin. This is the second hunt of 2021. Coming up, we'll discuss how the DNR determines the appropriate wolf population, how the overall wolf population is calculated, and much more. Your questions are welcome. Join us by calling 800-780-9742. You can send an email to route51@wpr.org. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Paul DeMaine, Adrian Wydevin, and Pat Quaintance are our guests today as we look at the wolf hunt in Wisconsin and the ongoing debate encompassing it. Your thoughts are welcome. You can join the conversation by phone at 800-780-9742 or email route51@wpr.org. Before the break, we were talking about the quota that was set by the Natural Resources Board. I know the state's tribal nations are pretty unhappy with the board's decision. They have said that it potentially violates their federal treaty rights. Paul, can you explain the treaty rights and why the tribes are entitled to a percentage of the quota for people who might not know?
Well, I want to say, first of all, that I don't envy anyone on either side of this discussion because it's difficult. I think the first thing we could agree upon is that there's some things that we probably will never agree upon in regards to the ethical questions, the cultural questions that come up in this discussion. But when it comes to treaty rights, there's a fiduciary responsibility, a trust responsibility that the United States government signed with the Ojibwe people in this particular case, and which has obligations on both sides. Indian tribes are not the only ones that have an obligation toward those treaty rights. And those treaty rights, if you look at the 44 treaties that were signed with the Ojibwe Nation, consistently talked about preserving the right to manage and access resources to feed and utilize within a family economic model, that is the right to hunt, fish, and gather on the lands. That fiduciary trust responsibility in a contract in a treaty was signed by two sides. So all the indigenous people have half of the obligation. And so far, the DNR managing these resources has not, at least from a tribal view, is not a positive view, because they're not just managing things. In a lot of cases, they're permitting people to shoot wolves as a tool, permitting to shoot sand cranes because people like to shoot stuff, permitting companies and corporations to pollute up to a certain level. Less management than an agency that permits people to degrade the earth or the resources in many ways. And I think that, again, that model just simply says that tribes and non-Indigenous entities are going to be in conflict. And so we need to look not only to short-term solutions, but long-term solutions. And again, I say, sometime, I know farmers in northern Wisconsin who have wolf packs in their farm areas, and they read the wolves, they work with the wolves, they don't have predation. And so I don't know what the people who are losing horses are doing, maybe nothing. And it's a concern. We need to deal with those. There needs to be culling, there needs to be action taken. But I don't think that allowing people to have fun shooting wolves is the way that we ought to cull or manage or use that as a tool. If that's the tool, then give it to the tribes to utilize as they need based on what they do because of their relationship with those wolves.
You're listening to Route 51. You can join the conversation at 800-780-9742. We do have a caller. It's Claire from Sauk County. Thanks for calling, Claire. What's your question?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to know more about the Natural Resources Board. From what I gather, these people are very, very powerful, and apparently I don't know much about them, but it seems like the taxpayers funding these people? Because obviously we fund the DNR, but if they have reign over the DNR's decisions. What's the deal?
Sure. Adrian, I mean, you were with the DNR in the past. Can you explain what the role of the Natural Resources Board is and answer Claire's question?
Sure, to some extent. The Natural Resource Board is the governing body for the Natural Resource Department. They are a citizen board, so they're not really paid. They get their expenses covered. And of course, if those expenses would be covered by the same sort of funding that the DNR has available. So they're the policy setting board for the DNR. And up until recently, mostly what the Natural Resource Board said is what the DNR followed. Now, currently we have sort of a conflict debate occurring between the Natural Resource Board and DNR, arguing over just who has what authority. And in my 33 years in DNR, I'd never seen this. The Natural Resource Board was always the final policy setting board for the DNR. So that's what this board consists of. Every state has some kind of a Natural Resource Board or Conservation Commission, it might be called in different states, and that oversees their DNR or their fish and game department.
So that's not unusual to have a Natural Resources Board, but as you said, it's unusual to have them disagree with the DNR. Why do you think they are not on the same page, Adrian?
Well, the members of the board are selected by the various governors. Each governor has an opportunity to select members, and currently one of the members of the Natural Resource Board was a selection from the previous administration and has refused to step down and allowed a new person to replace him from the current governor. And that's created a controversy. That existing board member apparently has a more conservative perspectives on wolf management and more aggressive concerns as far as managing wolves. And so that's creating problems. He's not allowing the new person to serve in her place. And we've not seen this kind of action by the Natural Resource Board in the past.
Right, and that's the same kind of manipulation that occurs when a organization from out of state comes in and files a lawsuit shopping for a judge that enforces their particular position and doesn't file the appeal properly so that tribes can appeal that before the last hunt, which was a devastating event to occur. So you've got manipulation of the board with money and parties that are from out of the state of Wisconsin that have no business manipulating the appointments, refusing to hold hearings to appoint the new governor's representative on it. And so that, causes a lot of problem. And until I think they resolve some of those problems, I think that it's going to be difficult to move forward on any of these issues.
You know, some people are concerned about the quota being exceeded. There's also disagreement on how far over the quota the February hunt was. If we use the 119 non-tribal tag figures, that's 83%. Hunter Nation calculates it as 9% over the quota. Patrick, why is there a discrepancy there?
Because I think the Natural Resource Board wasn't polled at the time. And this was all new ground that we were stepping on here also. The Natural Resource Board wasn't told how many tags were going to be issued out to the tribes. I'm thinking that they would have wanted the quota to be much higher. That's my thinking on it. And they were not happy with that. So this is the reason why they're having a discrepancy today with the Natural Resource Board wants 300 and the DNR only wants 130. They wanted to have more tags issued out. The February deal was a big fiasco. I blame a lot of this on the DNR. They had 6 years to negotiate with the tribes and come up with a determination. They had 6 years to work on the February hunt, and they did absolutely nothing. And then all of a sudden, when Hunters Nation stepped in and sued the state to have the hunt, which was in state statute that it was mandatory that they have this hunt, everything was presented to the Natural Resource Board. And when you issue out 20-to-1 tags, it created a big problem. And that's how come there was the wolves taken in such a quick hurry, because there was more people on the landscape hunting wolves and trapping wolves.
You know, Pat brings up an interesting point here, and Adrian, I would like your thoughts on this. George Meyer, who until his retirement was executive director of the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation and a former DNR secretary, is quoted as saying the department knew for a year that the gray wolf was going to be delisted and should have had in place all the regulatory elements for a wolf hunt for January and February. Why didn't they?
Well, one of the things that was difficult is that while the Fish and Wildlife Service in March of 2019 had reported that they were planning to start a delisting plan for the gray wolf. They published their provisionary rule at that time and indicated sometime within the next year or so that might occur. But DNR didn't know when that was going to occur. So they couldn't prepare for a winter hunt until they knew exactly when the delisting was going to occur. And that normally takes several months to prepare for a hunt. You have to have the population information. You have to have meetings on what to set the quotas, including a consultation with the tribes. That's a process that takes several months, and not knowing the exact time or date when the delisting was going to occur, the department really didn't have time to prepare for a hunt in January. And when the Fish and Wildlife Service finally announced in November exactly that a new rule had been developed and delisting was going to occur, there really wasn't time to plan for a hunt. And the DNR initially recommended they would wait until the fall to give them plenty of time to plan for the hunt instead of rushing into a hunt in the middle of wintertime. So I disagree that the department really had time to adequately plan for that.
In August, John Johnson, who is chairman of the Lac des Flambeaux Ojibwe Nation, was quoted in the Green Bay Press Gazette saying, "It seems like our voices are never heard." Paul, why do some tribal members feel that way?
Well, because generally our voices are rarely heard. To have a treaty right to access 50% of the resources on ceded territory on public lands and having literally no say on a whole lot of issues that impact those resources, to ask the question about what the DNR is doing with chronic wasting disease or the permitting of oil pipelines through northern Wisconsin or after the Minnesota fiasco, which has had breaches and frack outs and all kinds of other things. It just questions their management in general. And so the institution set up to regulate and manage resources lacks indigenous voices throughout that entity. And it's set up as a structure that takes, again, a European model for sporting and applies it over an attempt to try to regulate and manage and control all these resources rather than trying to figure out how we can work with them. And so the tribes are going to say that again. Either it has to do with the permitting process for events in public lands. The tribal voice is rarely heard on many of these issues. Let's go back to the walleye situation where the DNR managed the walleye population in northern Wisconsin with a whole lot of schematics that ended up being voodoo in a lot of ways. And in the last 20 years, we've added tons of regulatory information about what's going on with that particular resource that the DNR never had. And so as we add bodies of information, I think we get better decisions. But when you know, again, there are some things that we're just never going to agree on. And as an added point, Indigenous people will never appreciate the sporting kill, no matter what kind of a tool it is, of the wolves at a time when there's some people who take pleasure in that sporting event. They have fun. They want a right to, why is anyone shooting a sandhill crane? Oh, it's a tool to do something with it, but it seems unnecessary from a tribal perspective that has respect for the rights of other animals and entities and living creatures that God put here to live along with us, and we are subservient and dependent on. No,
thanks,
we're not heard very well.
Thank you, Paul. We have a caller. Mike is on the line. Mike is from Vilas County. Welcome to Route 51. What's your question, Mike?
My question, I live in an area that's got wolves and has a bunch of deer, And in Vilas County last year, we had over 800 deer just picked off our state and county highways. And there's so many deer that I don't think we'd have the wolves if it's not for these high populations of deer. I talked to my insurance agent. There was over 58,000 deer killed by cars or car crashes. And I wish they'd address that. And I know a lot of the people here that are seeing wolves are actually seeing coyotes. I mean, I've talked to so many people that claim they saw wolves. And when I talked to them or looked at the sites, because I used to work for the DNR, and they were coyote sightings. They weren't timber wolves.
That's an interesting question. Pat, what do you know about that? How do we know how many wolves are in Wisconsin?
Well, there's different ways to find that out. You know, one of them is Adrian was really evident. This was the track cones that we have. They do different sections of the state, and they have volunteers go through and they only count the more than one wolves. And there's other different ways too. Howling is another one that they go through and listen to how many critters are responding back to them. Adrian's have done this also. He would probably be better at it than I would answering that question.
But sure. What do you think, Adrian? How are those numbers calculated, and how do we know that the numbers being reported are accurate?
So the population estimations for Wisconsin since 1980 have been done through a system called territorial mapping, whereby snow track surveys are conducted in the wintertime to search for wolf packs and get track information from them using both agency folks and volunteers. Radio telemetry has been used to capture wolves in the spring and summer, follow them year-round, and count those wolves from the air, collecting reports from the general public. And that comes up with a minimum count, and that's been the system that's been used through 2020. The department is now going through a new method of estimating the wolf population known as occupancy modeling, by which they still use the snow track information, but by using a modeling system, come up with more of an estimation of the population. In the past, it was a minimum count of the population. So this estimation probably comes closer to the true number of wolves that exist in the state in mid-late winter. And that's how we obtain information on the wolf population.
You're listening to Adrian Wideoven, Patrick Quaintance, and Paul DeMaine. They are our guests today on Route 51 as we continue our look at the controversy surrounding the fall wolf hunt in Wisconsin. When we return, we'll examine the role hunting plays in conservation and management and what could change when the DNR updates its wolf management plan. Your thoughts are welcome. Join us by calling 800-780-9742. You can also email us, route51@wpr.org. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Pat Quaintance, Paul DeMaine, and Adrian Wideoven are our guests today as we continue our discussion on Wisconsin's wolf hunt and what to expect when the season opens this fall. We'd like to hear your thoughts on the issue. Email us at route51@wpr.org or join us by phone by calling 800-780-9742. Adrian, what is the current population goal that's been set for Wisconsin wolves?
Well, the goal, as Pat mentioned, is the last time the DNR had a goal was the 1999 plan, a goal of 350 wolves. But currently we have a population that's probably about above 1,000 wolves. We really don't know very well where the population is at after this last winter's harvest. So there currently is not a goal in place, and that's one of the things that will be determined through the new wolf management plan. I should point out the 350 goal was based on knowledge of wolf populations in the 1990s when we had an understanding the carrying capacity was about 500 wolves in Wisconsin, and based on population viability analysis suggesting that 300 to 500 wolves was a viable population. Our best estimate to the carrying capacity from recent research suggests it's about 1,242 wolves, and that being our biological carrying capacity. Normally, you don't want to manage a population below half of its carrying capacity, and it's best to normally manage at least within 75-80% of the carrying capacity. So the 350 goal is no longer a reasonable estimation. I should point out that while there were depredation problems with that maybe increased for a while, what we did see in 2012, 13, and 14, when we had an integrated depredation management program, the depredations came way down in the state, more than 50%. And the numbers of farms, or less than 50% of farms, were having depredation. We're down to levels that that we had when the population was at 350, yet the wolf population was about 730, 740 wolves. What we demonstrate is that if you focus the depredation controls on the areas where the depredations are occurring, which is generally less than 15% of wolf packs across the state, you don't have to drastically reduce the wolf population.
Well, some critics point to biological concerns about hunting wolves in the beginning of their breeding season. When do wolves breed in Wisconsin? Pat, why did the framers of Wisconsin's original wolf hunting policy schedule the hunt for November through February? What's the reasoning there?
Well, I think the reason why they pushed it back a little bit to have it November, because the fur quality on the wolves are a better fur quality. So far, we've never reached much past November for the wolf hunt. I think with the way we got the framework set up for the hunt, I don't think it's ever going to ever go back into the January and February breeding season, which a lot of people claim that it caused problems with breeding with the wolves and disrupted a lot of different things. And so through that process, they don't have any idea what is left on the landscape or how it hurt the population of wolves. So it's a big question, but I don't think once we get this all ironed out and once we get this all set and have an annual wolf hunt, I don't think we're going to, and this is in the works. It's a continuous thing. Yeah, we had a hunt in 12, 13, and 14, and things were pretty much in 14 were kind of flawless. We didn't have, the hunt went by real smooth. We didn't over harvest. We had a way, but this last hunt was a kind of a rush type thing, like Adrian said, and we didn't have the time to determine, and they didn't think in a week. We only had a week to hunt because February 28th was the last day. So the Natural Resource Board set at 20-1, and they put a lot of tags and a lot of people on the landscape. And then we had the snow conditions were perfect for running with dogs. So they didn't have no way to control the closure of the hunt in such a short little period of time.
Let's go to the phone. We have Norm on the line from Oneida County. Norm has a question for us. Thanks for calling, Norm.
Thank you. Yes, my question is regards that hunt in February. I heard they were running them down with dogs, running them down with snowmobiles. Why in the world did we have a hunting season in February? I realize that Trump took the wolves off the endangered species list in February, but why did we have a hunt in February?
Great question. Adrian, what do you know about that? Why did we have the hunt in February?
It was forced.
Yeah, we had a hunt in February because the DNR was sued to hold a hunt in February that the DNR had opted to wait till fall, but were forced by the courts to hold a hunting season in February. And many of us had recommended strongly against it because the very thing that we knew was going to be in the middle of the breeding season and hounds were going to be the main way they were going to be hunted.
Sued by an outside organization. But I'd be a little bit more interested in Pat and Adrian asked the question about what do we know about self-regulating populations of the wolf. I've read plenty of documents from Yellowstone and other places that say that at some certain point, the wolf population begins to reduce the amounts of pups they're producing because they understand the nature of the territory and the packs and so forth, and that the wolf packs in northern Wisconsin would achieve a certain threshold in which they would begin self-regulating themselves naturally in reduction in pup populations. What do you know about that? And why aren't we utilizing that rather than killing as the only tool?
Pat, what's your response to that?
Well, what's happened here, and I've been around this area for 30 years, and Adrian can vouch for this also. This pack of wolves that we've had here, and it's called the Echo Valley Pack, and it's been here established for years. And we didn't have any problems with depredation. It just didn't happen. The pack kept growing and kept growing and kept growing. Now it's split, and there's a pack on the Red Cliff Reservation, and there's the Echo Valley Pack. And what they've done is pretty much ate themselves out of the deer population. The deer population in my area here is down to pretty much zero. You don't see any deer running around, and the only food source that's here is the cattle. And I'm thinking that's why these animals have turned to these and started depredating on the cattle and the horses. The food source is so limited for them. And honestly, we didn't have no problem with them for numbers of years. And same way in Douglas County, where the deer population is really down in the northern part of the state of Douglas County and Bayfield County. And I think their food source is they've ate themselves out of house and home. In a reality part, I think, well, if we would leave these wolves alone, eventually they would get disease, or just like any other, their population would curtail. But when we got these farms on the landscape taking over some of their territory, I think we're going to have a constant problem with this. Right now they took 40 wolves north of Highway 2 over to County A in Port Wayne. They've taken U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services has taken 40 wolves out of this area. Has it helped? I think it has. And like Adrian said, if we do deal with the problem wolves, I'm thinking that's going to solve some of the problem. But the problem with this pack right here that we have right now, the alpha male and the alpha female are still here. And they've had pups this year. They got four more pups. So are they going to teach them to go after the cattle and the horses like they taught the other offspring? Right. I don't know.
Okay.
So here you have a situation in which a pack probably needs to be called or restrained because the alpha leaders are doing things that are not ordinarily done. If they're teaching their pups to go after horses and cattle is something that typically the pack leaders don't do, and very highly intelligent in regards to how some of this information, if you're telling me that the pack is retraining to focus on horses, that's kind of an interesting perspective, maybe because it's the only food source, but it does justify perhaps a culling of that particular pack in order to get back to some of their natural processes of selection. Also note that in those areas where we have wolf packs, we don't have chronic wasting disease, or at least that's what I've been told, which means that there is a natural way to take care of chronic wasting disease if we make these things compatible with each other.
Sherry is on the line from Vilas County. Sherry is a landowner that has more deer damage than wolf concern. Sherry, what is the issue?
Well, where I live in Vilas County, I'm in the kind of the southwestern part of the county, we have way too many deer. And there's a browse line throughout most of western Vilas County from too many deer on the landscape. And they spend a lot of time on public land, on Vilas County property, on the state forest, and the same thing. In fact, the forest managers for both of those entities tell us that the deer are actually inhibiting regrowth of harvested areas. So from my perspective, we could use a few more wolves in Vilas County because there's just way too many deer.
Thanks, Sherry. Adrian, what do you say to Sherry's comment?
Well, that's a common concern, is that, and if we look statewide or across much of the state, that our biggest agricultural problems in the state are actually the white-tailed deer. Wolves are fairly minor compared to other wildlife species. Bears, geese, deer all have much higher rates of depredation problems cost to farming than wolves do. So wolves are a little bit more isolated. In reference to Paul's early concern, typically the size of the deer herd or the ungulate population is what kind of dictates the size of the wolf population. Wolves seem to sort of regulate themselves within the limits of the deer or elk or whatever ungulate population is in the landscape. And that seems to be the biggest factor that determines the size of of a wolf population is the size of the ungulate population.
Paul, earlier in the program, you were talking about a potential solution where there would be corridors. Can you explain that a little bit for us and expand on that?
Take a good look of a map of Wisconsin, Michigan, and Minnesota and the upper third tiers. And you also almost already have corridors that are built from the national park, county parks, tribal lands, tribal reservations, and so forth that exist. And in other parts of the world, they're beginning to build corridors so that you have areas that animals can actually run under highways, over highways or sort, but you've got areas that are natural corridors of biodiversity that look much more like things were 200 or 300 years ago. And that's in the entire forest and flora and everything. But these are areas where we, just like in the national forest, over a course of time, we remove people that shouldn't be in areas where there are animals. When I built the trailer and I ate the blackberry bushes here and the bear showed up and ate my corn, it was kind of reciprocity because the bear were eating the blackberries a long time before I arrived and put my trailer here. I think we have to think about these areas that are populated by certain resources, and we need to remove human beings from some of these areas and make them non-growth development areas.
Pat, what is your thought on that? What do you think about Paul's suggestion?
I think it's a great idea. I don't know how we would go about doing that. I don't know how would, you know, what are we going to do? I guess, you know, buy the property from the people or...
That's how they did the national forest. They've given life estates for some of these individuals that are living out there, but when they pass away, that goes into back into its natural form. We've done it with a 50 to 70 year plan on the national forest and slowly filled in these areas. It needs to be a long-term plan so it's not disruptive, so that we have people who are cooperative and saying, look, I'll sell my estate, like to live for 50 more years, but after that, we're out of here and we don't have to worry about the wolves or the elk.
Earlier we touched on the DNR's wolf management plan, and I know the DNR is working on a new plan. I'd like to point out that the wolf management plan was written quite some time ago, 1999. It hasn't been updated in well over a decade. When will that be finished, Adrian, and what do you think it's going to look like?
Well, the plans are to have a new plan in place by the end of next summer, early fall of 2022. I'm guessing things such as population goals may change in the plan. Perhaps zones of how wolves are going to be managed and harvest will change somewhat. Hopefully, there'll be some updating of the general information on the wolf population, on some of the characteristics of wolves. Hopefully, we'll include efforts to educate people about wolves, that still is a real critical issue. That's a thing we've been pushing in Timberwolf Alliance a long time. And obviously in wolves, there are still so many misconceptions, misunderstandings, that education continues to be a very important part of any wolf management plan.
And Pat, we have about a minute left, and I would like to ask you, what would you like to see in the DNR's wolf management plan?
Well, we've been sitting at this 350. What Adrian talked about with this 350 goals, he didn't mention the social carrying capacity also. And I think that needs to be included in this. One of the things is all these groups that are on the landscape today, other than a handful, have, you know, when the 350 was established, everybody agreed on that. All the groups agreed on 350. And I understand back then that things have changed an awful lot. We didn't realize how fast this wolf population would grow. Naturally, we're going to have more than 350 wolves, but I don't think it's going to be 1,200. I hope not, anyway.
Thank you all for your perspective. That's all we have time for today on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Once again, a thanks to our guests, Pat Quaintance from the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation, Paul Demain from the Oneida Nation, and Adrian Wydevin with the Timberwolf Alliance. Our executive producer is Rick Ryer. Rick is also our on-air producer today. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. You can hear the archive of today's program at wpr.org/route51. Next week, we'll gain a better understanding of our Amish communities with a look at Amish history and culture, and in 2 weeks, a celebration of Wisconsin's most iconic supper clubs. Until then, we're heading out of town.